Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher and listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Jeff Blair is a member of the Manitoba Sports Writers and Sportscasters Hall of Fame. What Hall of Fame are you in? This is The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Light it up. National Harbor, Maryland, site of the baseball winter meetings, the Toronto Blue Jays. First out of the gate on Monday morning, signing Steve Pearce, or announcing, they have not announced it, agreeing to a two-year $12.5 million contract with Steve Pearce. Heard Mr. Wilner talk about Steve Pearce. We talked about him actually a little bit right out of the gate. I think most of us think he's a pretty good signing for the Blue Jays, good value signing. It's a guy who can play every day. He's a right-hand hitting outfielder, first baseman, and, as Mike Wilner pointed out, second baseman. I don't think you want to see him there on a regular basis, but I'll tell you what, I'd rather see him there than Russ Martin, for sure. Spent the 2016 season with Tampa and Baltimore. 13 home runs, 35 ribbies, 867 OPS in 302 plate appearances with both the Rays and the Orioles. And the Blue Jays, effectively, it seems to us, effectively closing the door on Edwin Encarnacion with that particular signing of Steve Pearce. We are joined by John Paul Morosi of the MLB Network. How are you doing, sir?
Good morning, Jeff. I'm doing outstanding. Glad to be here.
It's actually great
to be here in person.
It is, because you're on the air.
We talk so much with you, and I hear Mike all the time on the radio, so now we're all together.
Isn't
with Travis.
Something?
This is great.
Huh? Yeah.
Last night, yeah. I met the manager of the Italian team in the WBC.
Wow.
Thank you.
Must have been a thrill for Jeff Blair.
Il allenatore della squadra italiana, Marco Mazzieri, il mio amico. And everyone in Vaughan and Woodbridge understood what I just said.
That's right.
Is he going to be at the little thing at 4 o'clock today?
Exactamente. He will be there. He will be there. I'm very excited about it. I told him, too. I said, Marco, I'm working on like three or four Italian questions because I'm not a native speaker. I just sort of fake it well. And I told him, I said, I've got three or four questions that I'm practicing and then I'm rehearsing to try to make sure that I'm asking them correctly in Italian, and we'll send it back, hopefully send it back to the homeland so they can use it over there.
This brings me back to the Whistler Olympics. I don't know if you remember, Blair, but one of the events of the Olympics, I think it's a giant slalom. I don't know. You have like 230 competitors from all over the world. The standards are extraordinarily low.
Right.
So there was a prince from some little protectorate in Europe, and there was an Israeli skier, and I interviewed him in Hebrew.
Beautiful.
And
wow.
Yeah, I don't think we played it on the fan, but we got a good 2.5 minutes.
But it's a great memory. It's a great memory.
It's amazing.
It's great to see you're able to do that. I remember covering the in Beijing, the Olympics, covering the baseball competition, and it was Cuba and Canada, and you had translators who were translating Spanish, English, Spanish, Mandarin. And because it's the Olympics, there was a French translator. Nobody French was covering baseball. But anyhow, so this was like the world's worst interview. And all I wanted to know was what pitch the Cuban player hit. I can't even remember who the Cuban player was.
¿Qué lanzamiento?
I don't know. It might have been Gurriel or something. You know, what pitch? So. You know, you had to ask the question in English, and then it was repeated in Chinese, and it was repeated in Spanish, and blah, blah, blah. So I just got tired, and I asked the guy, I said, cambio? He goes, si, change up. I said, thank you. That was the extent of our conversation. So the Blue Jays, first out of the gate, John Paul Morosi, Steve Pearce, 2 years, $12.5 million. We just saw Mark Shapiro walking by here, looked very happy. Spring in his step.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not a spring in his step. But what do you make of that signing from the Blue Jays' point of view?
Well, a couple things. Number one, this is not great news for Encarnacion and his camp, certainly. I think we talked last night about how really his options are dwindling with the Yankees signing Holiday and the Astros signing Beltran. Now I'm starting to wonder where exactly Edwin goes. I think now the Rangers actually step to the forefront as a team that needs righty power, needs a first baseman, really needs a DH. So watch the Rangers closely now on Edwin. From a Jays standpoint, this to me, guys, conveys that they are comfortable in many respects with this mentality of shorter-term deals and combinations, such as platoons with your everyday club and spreading around the innings with the rotation. Again, it worked. The philosophy worked well last year with not signing Price and instead allocating the money to the likes of Happ and Estrada. Worked very well. Will it work the same way with the lineup? I am personally skeptical, but Pierce has shown an ability to hit on a short level in the American League East. He has done well, certainly with Baltimore, and shown that he can hit. But you look at it, guys, and there's something about Edwin Encarnacion and the fact that he has averaged upwards of 30-plus homers and 110 RBIs or so over 5 years, a presence in the lineup that they are going to miss. And I think there is a certain unquantifiable aspect to having a bat like that. We will see how much the Jays miss him, because right now, guys, very clearly it looks as though he is playing for someone who is not the Jays in 2017.
It does look like that, and it's an interesting point that, you know, that obviously they're going to miss him. You don't replace Edwin Encarnacion with Steve Pearson, Justin Smoak, or Kendrys Morales and Steve Pierce, or however you're going to work it out. But the beautiful thing about the Blue Jays is that, you know, you talk about that presence, that bat that they're going to miss, absolutely, but they've still got two. In Josh Donaldson and Troy Tulowitzki, who have that same, maybe Tulowitzki doesn't have that same presence anymore. Donaldson certainly does.
Sure.
And you have, even without Edwin and Bautista, you've still got a nice little middle of the order with Donaldson, Morales, and Tulowitzki. Maybe it's behind, hopefully, for the Blue Jays. They would love to have Dexter Fowler in that leadoff spot, and Travis hits two, and then you've got Donaldson, Morales, Tulowitzki, 3-4-5. There are still some scary bats there, even without Edwin and Jose.
I agree. And the name you mentioned, Dexter Fowler, I think is now very important for the Jays, or maybe even someone like an Ian Desmond. But I think at this point in time, if you've gone lower cost with the likes of Pierce, and you've sort of tried to do things, and really Morales as well as a more reasonable signing, if the idea is you're going to go lower cost with some of those acquisitions, then I think you have to really show that you're really serious about winning this division by going out and getting a premium guy for the outfield. Because right now the outfield is thin. The outfield right now, if they had to play a game today, it's Upton and Carrera in the corners and Pilar in center field, which is just not good enough. And so that they have to, I think, add one, at the minimum, one everyday player and probably two. Because otherwise, I just don't see it. And the point about Tulo, I'll say this about his middle of the lineup reliability. Here are his games played the last 4 years. 131 this year, 128 the previous year, 126 the year before that, and 47 the year before that. He is basically, his history tells you, at some point in time, he's going on the DL. And so now you're talking about a middle of the lineup where when he's out, and it looks like by the history tells you he'll miss about 30 games at minimum, okay, at minimum. So he misses 30 games. That's 30 games a year when really, if you don't make another meaningful upgrade to the middle of the lineup, it's Donaldson sort of by himself if there's no Bautista, no Edwin. So it's amazing how, guys, you can see a collection of bats with one or two departures really change the look and how afraid the opposition is. The Jays have made their identity being a fearsome group from top to bottom that can hurt you almost anywhere. And if you lose Edwin and Jose and you don't really replace them with anybody that's got similar thunder, you really are in a situation where it starts to change the whole dynamic and the way that the opposition, how nervous they are. I mean, they're all human beings out there. When the pitcher looks at it and sees Bautista, sees Edwin, sees all those guys, they get nervous. And I think that you see mistakes made as a result of that. And I think that now, without Edwin, it's a fundamentally different Blue Jays lineup.
I want to say something that I've always wanted to say on the radio, having hosted a call-in show for the last 15 years. Two comments and a question.
Go for it.
For you, John. The first one is, I think the Blue Jays' identity sort of shifted last year. While they were scary, Jose Bautista wasn't that scary last year. You know, they weren't a top-to-bottom team that you were afraid of that could kill you. They won on their pitching last year. And obviously there was going to be a fundamental shift with Bautista and Edwin being free agents. The other thing is, I think that if they started play today, Steve Pierce is in the outfield. And Justin Smoke is playing first base, and Morales is DHing. Obviously, that's not the way they want to start it. But I think if they had to, it wouldn't be both Upton and Zeke playing every day. And the question is, because you are so deep in this, and you have tentacles in a lot of places that we don't.
I try.
Do you think that Dexter Fowler might just be using the Blue Jays to up a potential offer from a Giants or a Cardinals or something like that?
I don't think so. I think Dexter Fowler's interest in Toronto is genuine. I do. I could see him loving the city. I think he'd be a great. He's a great personality, great guy, very genuine. I think he would fit great in Toronto. I do. I could see him being a really nice fit in the clubhouse too. On the field, off the field, he'd be phenomenal. And so I think he's coming into this with a very open mind. And so I don't think it's a situation where he has it in his mind that there's any sort of bias against playing on turf or playing in Canada. I don't see that at all. I think he's approaching this very genuinely. And if the Jays give Dexter the largest offer, I expect he'll probably sign with
John. What do you think is happening or has happened to the market for Edwin and Jose Bautista right now? Or are we? You know, Mike made the point earlier, and I mean, as guilty as anybody. Every year at the winter meeting, somebody says this is the year the market's going to shrink. The market's going to shrink. Guy ends up getting his four-year contract.
Sure.
What do you think's happening to the market for Edwin and Jose right now?
With Edwin, I do think his market options have dwindled. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you this, it's sort of on both players, and this might apply to Jose more, but I think it certainly applies to Edwin as well. The last couple years, we have seen a fundamental change in the way that teams view free agents through the prism of age. I have said this before, but I think it bears repeating now, especially. Last year, Jason Hayward signs for about $180 million. You could have gotten on total cash for a third of that price Daniel Murphy, Dexter Fowler, and Ian Desmond. Total cash for those three players was about $60 million. Maybe not even that.
But Hayward's 12 years old.
Hayward got 180. Exactly. It's all about age. And so we're seeing the deals signed right now. Beltran, 1 year. Holiday, 1 year. Teams like the one-year exposure because they're increasingly, and this is their right, I suppose, they are increasingly biased against players whose ages start with three. They just simply do not want to go along with these players anymore. Hayward got a great deal because of outfield defense and age, largely. It was not because he's an RBI guy, because he's not, or a power guy, really, because he's not. So this is the wrong era of the game. This has even changed 5 years ago in Dallas. Albert Pujols gets a 10-year deal. It takes him into his early 40s. That if he were a free agent right now under the same circumstances that he was at that time, there is not a chance he will get that deal. Okay? The market is, and it's, again, this is the last 2 years, really since Miguel Cabrera signed his deal, which again, another 10-year extension, basically. Everything is different now. So, that's why it's so fascinating. We talk about the way that the luxury tax threshold works, spending in the game. GMs simply do not have a comfort level with veteran players like this. So, as a typically long-winded answer to your question, Jeff, I will tell you that I really do think in this case that Bautista and Edwin have some legitimate concerns. I think Texas could save Edwin. Maybe the Orioles could, too, with Edwin. But this is where it's interesting with Jose. Could you see Texas signing him? With all the history there, could you see Baltimore signing him with the history there? There's a lot of history there, and I think to a certain extent, if you view both these players as American League players predominantly, which I think is accurate, your options now, whether especially in Jose's case, with some very public dust-ups, although it was interesting. I asked Colby Lewis a couple weeks ago,
what he felt about this possibility, about Jose joining the Rangers. He said, listen, the first thing that would happen is John Daniels would go to Adrian Beltre and say, what do you think? Okay, a fellow native of the Dominican Republic, he knows him very well. And if Adrian signed off, he basically could get the rest of the organization to sign off on it as well. But that's, it was interesting to hear Colby say that. Basically, it's up to Beltre. If Beltre says he's good, it's time to put things in the past, then I think there's a chance.
You know, it's interesting because I was thinking back to an interview that was done just after the World Series, and I can't remember who it was, but they were talking to Jed Hoyer of the Cubs, and the conversation was how it really has become a young man's game. And he talked about how the Cubs had made, basically had their philosophical approaches. We're going to try to have as many young position players as we can. And you know what? We'll go after a pitcher in free agency who's 27, 28. We'll let the other team sign him, develop him, go through the whole Tommy John surgery, rehab him, and we'll take him on the other end. And the thinking was that because it has become such a young person's game, you want a young everyday core. Hmm. And I think that gets to your point about this bias against players. Bias is probably the wrong word. This tendency to not want to invest in players who are in their 30s.
Right. It's a very fair point, and that's a great point that Jed made. I understand it completely. And I remember Theo Epstein telling me this a number of years ago when they were in the process of trading guys. And I think it was actually when they traded Samardzija, And I remember asking him specifically, Theo, do you need to get back pitching? Because at that point in time, that was when they traded Samardzija and got Russell.
Right.
At that point in time, they had a good position player group that included, at that moment, Rizzo, Castro, Baez.
They had like five shortstops.
Right,
five
exactly. So they had all these guys that were already in the mix. And I remember asking Alcantara at the time, is it important, Theo, that what you get back is young pitching? He said, not necessarily. I want to get back the best talent, and then when I feel like we have a chance to win, I will sign or trade for the healthy pitching.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really interesting way to look at it. That at the time that the Cubs felt as though they had a chance to win, they would go out and get Lester. They would go out and get Lackey. Hendricks, of course, was really better than they thought he was going to be. And, of course, they got him in the trade for Dempster. So it's a very interesting way to look at it. I think clearly now everyone wants to be the new Cubs because they have now won and they have established this new way of doing things. But that aspect of things, a Lackey on a short-term deal, that's the signing. That, to me, is the new model for what teams want to do. He's already had his Tommy John, and he really came back in better shape, frankly, than he was before. So he's sort of this veteran, smart, knows his body, back end of his career, will accept a shorter-term deal. Boom. And Lester, of course, they just knew him so well personally from the Boston days that they felt so comfortably in signing him to a long-term deal. So that, I think, is the way teams are doing it. And again, the Jays, to their credit, have done a good job. I mean, the Estrada was a great signing last year. Hap was, I think, a great signing. The Jays were solid from a pitching standpoint in the rotation. But the bullpen still has to be addressed in a meaningful way with, I think, multiple pitchers, not just one. I think they probably need multiple guys, especially if Biagini is a possible starter for them. So we'll see. It's going to be a very interesting offseason for them still. I mean, it's in progress. But I think that aspect of trying to take that pitching-type philosophy to the lineup, we will see how successful or not it is now with the likes of Pierce replacing Edwin.
It's interesting because when we talked to Ross Atkins right at the end of the season, he talked about getting – the first thing he said was more platoon advantages, right? The Blue Jays were way too right-handed last year. Steve Pierce doesn't necessarily help
doesn't
you
help that.
That. If,
help
he,
that.
If he's playing every day, but if he's just a guy who comes in and beats the crap out of lefties and is a helpful guy when a right-hander starts off the bench, that helps. But now you have Morales who gives you a platoon advantage no matter what. And you would think Dexter Fowler, if they sign him.
Yes.
There's another one. And that's the talk about Mitch Moreland, right? Mm-hmm. That came out from Shy yesterday.
Even Adam Eaton,
Adam Eaton would be a wonderful thing to pick up in a trade.
Because and one thing I was going to mention too, Mike, on that topic, he might not have said it this way in terms of you talk about the platoon advantage, but they also have to be younger somewhere. This was the oldest team in baseball in 2016. The Jays, when the season ended, they had the oldest roster in the major leagues.
Yep.
And I realize Benoit is a free agent and Jose and Edwin, but you've got to get
younger in a functional way, too. You need to find, again, to borrow your Cubs point, durable, young, everyday players who are probably not going to get injured. Because Tulo has, for the most part, actually been on the field for the Jays. He hasn't been Mr. Reliable necessarily, but he's been on the field. And as he gets older, that's a increasing concern as he ages. So, again, the lineup looks good now, but you do wonder about his durability going forward. That's why you have to find as many young, durable players as possible. Fowler is that. Adam Eaton is that. Mm-hmm. And we'll see how things unfold.
What do you think happens to Andrew McCutchen? There hasn't been, we've only been here for one night, but there was a lot of talk about Andrew McCutchen in the lead up to this. Just some of the names that are connected to him. But when you look at this market, what do you think the Pirates could get for Andrew McCutchen? And I'll spin this in a different direction. Are the Pirates in some ways, would they not be better off moving him in season, moving him at the deadline, than right now?
It's a great question, Jeff. I would tell you this. It's my expectation here today that McCutchen will be traded by the end of the week.
Okay.
I think the Nationals are certainly involved. Sources tell me that the Rangers are involved, and even the Dodgers, I was told last night, they're on the periphery. And I think there's enough interest, and also notably, guys, you look over the last several days, we've all been talking about this a lot, all of us sort of in the baseball repertorial insider milieu, we've all been debating this. And at any point in time, have you heard the Pirates come out and say, we're not trading him?
No.
No. We have heard nothing, like zero, on the record from Neil Huntington or Frank Coonerly saying, no, you know what? We're totally comfortable with him staying. They've not even tried to fib and tell us that. So they're trying to trade him, clearly. And I expect they'll be successful in doing so. And as for McCutchen and the amount of time that you would have him, to me, yes, you could trade him in the season. But Doug Melvin has said this, and it's a very good point. One of the great Canadian baseball philosophers has told us that you're always better off trading a position player during the offseason because there are more teams that can acquire him.
Right.
Pitching, you can always trade at the deadline because everybody wants a starting pitcher. Everybody, when Cole Hamels got traded, everybody that's even remotely in contention, and even the Rangers at the time were on the fringe, everybody wants that starting pitcher because very few guys have five Cole Hamels. Okay, so he's an improvement for everybody. But as your season unfolds and your everyday club works out, if you have a center fielder that you like, you're not going to get Andrew McCutchen. So that's like a literally, you got one chance. So that's why it always makes more sense to trade the position player in the offseason. I expect the Pirates are going to do that. And that's why Sale, if you're going to tell me the White Sox want to wait on Sale or Quintana, I'm more accepting of that philosophy. But McCutchen, I believe, will be a National or a Dodger or a Giant or a Ranger, I believe, by the end of the week.
And you have to also remember, too, part of this trading Andrew McCutchen idea is coming off that terrible year, most people believe he's going to bounce back and
right.
he's going to be better. So if you keep him and by the end of May he hasn't bounced back yet, then the market falls deeply.
Two things on that. Number one, he's a notoriously slow starter. So the chances of his value going up over the first couple of months are not great. Also, he had like an 840 OPS or so from August 1 on. So if you watched him in the last 2 months, which I'm sure a lot of these clubs did, he was better. And he's 30 years old. Talking about that curve, to buy Andrew McCutchen's 30 and 31 years, so age 30, age 31 seasons at like $28.75 million in this marketplace is a good buy.
Yes.
I would take that. I take
Without
that
question.
Buy. I take that buy. He's been a very durable player. He still, I think, has retained a lot of the life in his body, even though he's now 30 years old. And also, I think it's just time for a change of scenery. I think he would be reinvigorated. He was with that team for so long, tried to put him over the top. They couldn't win that division series against the Cardinals. They lost two wild card games. That era of players, if they trade him, guys, the only player who started in that victorious wild card game in 2013 when Martin hit the home run, it was Bedlam there in Pittsburgh, the only player left over from that starting lineup is going to be Starling Marte, one of the nine.
And the Jays will have two of them in Martin and Francisco
Liriano. Exactly. Great call, Mike. Well done.
And, the other thing, too, I suppose, from the Pirates' point of view in trading a position player in the offseason is that does give you time to – if you have to backfill, fill in what you've just given away,
right.
It gives you time to
And they've got Marte to play center field.
And Right.
Austin Meadows is coming. They got Polanco already in the outfield. So they're the Pirates. This is the time to trade him. You've got the in-house replacement.
What do you both think of these ideas that, you know, when I think back, we hear, oh, Trey Turner's untouchable. That's not happening. If Washington is going to trade for Andrew McCutchen, I can't remember who the other guy was who was absolutely untouchable. I keep thinking back to Pokey Reese. Remember when Ken Griffey Jr. was available and going to be traded? Pokey Reese was untouchable. We're not moving this guy. And there have been a million of those untouchables who never amount to anything. What's your idea about having a guy in your system who you say, no, we're absolutely never going to move?
I think it depends on the depth of your system. If you've got one guy.
But he could still wind up not hitting.
Yeah, but I still think if you've got one guy, you, given what we were talking about, how the game is going young, I think I would stick with that guy.
Two years ago, the Cubs would never move Jorge Soler, right, for anything.
I know. It quite often doesn't work out, but sometimes it does. And I think the only counter-argument I would make to that, and I'll let John jump in here too, the only counter-argument I'd make to that's kind of, in some ways, it's kind of an odd business argument, but I would rather do that before I've invested a lot of time and energy in the guy. That gets to your point. I would rather do that. Now, if I've spent 3 years, 4 years, 5 years developing a guy, 4 years, at some point I want to see that trade-off myself. But in terms of saying a guy's untouchable, I would never say anybody in my organization is untouchable. Never. Even doesn't matter. Even if it's a guy like Aaron Sanchez, I wouldn't trade him. But if somebody came along and made me an offer that's absolutely stupid, of course you'd move him.
Sure. I think that we in the media are probably guilty of propagating this mentality of the untouchable player ourselves because it's a good story and it makes it for fun debate. But in all candor, if the Angels called up Mark Shapiro today and said, we'll give you Trout for Sanchez, they'd do it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So, really, it makes for a fun story. I remember distinctly the night before, it was the Monday night of the winter meetings in 07. I was still covering the Tigers at the time for the Free Press in Detroit, and Dave Dombrowski said, we like our club. We're a pretty set club. We like our young talent. Andrew Miller's a big part of our future. Maben's a big part of our future. And the next day they traded for Miguel Cabrera with both those guys in the deal.
Yeah.
So it can happen that quickly. I would say this. You look at Trey Turner. If I'm the Nationals, I would not trade Trey Turner for McCutchen because I think Turner is as much a part of my future as McCutchen would be. Other teams, you know, if I'm Houston, would I put Bregman in a deal for Chris Sale? I might. If I'm the Nationals, would I trade Lucas Giolito? I might.
Yeah.
Because I don't think Giolito is as important to them as Turner is. I think Turner, the difference with Turner, guys, is that Turner is not just a prospect. He has gotten to the big leagues and proven he can do it, much like Mookie Betts. Those guys, I don't trade. But if it's the guy at AA who is, you know, Jerks and Profar, for example, from a couple of years ago.
Right.
Talk about that.
Right.
Exactly. So those are the guys where if I haven't seen them in the big leagues thriving yet, I would give a lot of thought to trading just because I think that you look at that and say there's still that unknown quality. For me right now, barring injury, Trey Turner and Mookie Betts are known. We know how good they are. They've proven it. They're a big part of those team's futures. We know that for a fact. So those two guys I would not trade under almost any circumstances.
Mr. Morosi, we're going to let you run and do some work.
I wanted to ask him one more question about former Pittsburgh Pirates.
We
were talking about
brevity is my strength. Go on. Brevity is my strength. Go on.
The Blue Jays just officialized the Steve Pearce signing, by the way. So there you go. 2 years, $12.5 million. But speaking of former Pittsburgh Pirates, as we were a few minutes ago, Jose Bautista, now that, I don't know how much it changes, but now that you can only qualify a guy once, and so if a team out there signs Jose Bautista to a one-year deal, 2 weeks ago it could have been, well, 1 year and then we'll get a draft pick after he leaves. Now it's 1 year we give up a draft pick. He leaves for nothing. We're talking about age and we're talking about multi-year contracts. What does that do to, I mean, does it make it impossible for anybody to sign him to a one-year deal?
It certainly hurts the chances. You'd have to say that. And it's interesting to me, guys, that you look at the guys that got the qualifying offer. I believe Cespedes is the only one that signed. Because I think everybody is trying to figure out what this means. Everybody's still processing it. But I do think, to your point, Mike, it has a negative impact on him because I'm not sure. I'll say this. As we sit here today, I don't know
how many teams are comfortable going multiple years with Bautista. I think there are a number of teams that would go one. Including Boston, but I don't know how many teams would go multiple. And that is a really interesting question, because I think that 1 year deal, if it's the Red Sox, that 1 year number might be lower by $1 million or so, maybe $1 or 2 million, than it would have been if they had known they could get a draft pick on the back end.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I'm with Mike. I think obviously a lot of people are focused on Encarnacion and Tron, but I think the Bautista market is going to be really fascinating. That
it could be a long wait.
Yeah, he may be a June sign. He might be a June sign.
Oh, I don't know about June.
Listen, we know this. We know how proud he is, how effectively stubborn he can be, and I say that with respect.
Yes.
That's part of his personality, and he would probably admit to that as well. He's a very headstrong person. I think we've seen it. We know it. We know the man. That's how he is. And there's a certain pride there that the Jays made that qualifying offer knowing there's about a 99% chance that he would say, no way am I accepting this. I'm still the player that I thought I was a year ago. And that's knowing the psychology of your player. If you had asked the Jays right now, would you take him back at that number? Now, I'm not sure that they would. Mm. If they offered him, if the question is, would they offer him right now, especially after signing Steve Pierce, a 1 year, $17.2 million contract? I think the answer to that is no.
I do too, and I think that's incredible when you think about what kind of player he's been and the career
he's still
had.
A top 20 outfielder in the game on OPS this year. He's still a top 20 player.
He's going to be the one guy in this era who was an elite player and never cashed in, never signed a big deal. He will, it's possible, never make $15 million in a season. And it's incredible in the era that he played in and the things that he did.
Yeah, I said this and I wrote it. I'll say it again. I really think he's the classic example of a guy. You've got to be careful when you pick your agent. You've absolutely got to be careful when you pick your agent. And if I'm an older player, I would probably, honestly, I'd probably go with one of the more established guys. And I look at and the way Jay Alou handled, I admit I'm jaundiced a bit because of the way he handled the Irvin Santana situation with the Blue Jays, left Alex looking really bad. But I'm beginning to wonder if maybe we're seeing, you know, we've seen Edwin with Paul Kinzer and Jose with Jay Alou. They're represented by another agency. I wonder if there's a better chance of them being signed. John, we are going to let you run. Appreciate you doing this.
My
Travis,
pleasure.
What were you just showing me? Who is reporting that the Indians have checked in on Edwin?
Jeff Passan.
Oh, it's only Passan. That's fine. Just kidding. Jeff Passan reporting that the Indians have checked in on Edwin Encarnacion. John Pomerosi, thanks so much
for
joining
us. My
pleasure,
guys.
Thank you, sir.
Enjoy your winter meetings.
Il piacere tutto mio.
Yeah, you too. And I will see
you
at the...
It was our pleasure, too.
Hey, well done. You got it, man.
Contextual clues, baby.
Capisce tutto. Capisce tutto.
I will see you at the WBC News Conference.
Sounds great. Ci vediamo presto.
That's what I said, too.
Also, news before you throw. Jim Salisbury, Philly, great writer who you know well.
Yes.
Reports Joaquin Benoit. Going to the Phillies.
Joaquin Benoit to the Phillies. Wow. There you go. It's all happening.
Things
the baseball
are happening.
Meetings, National Harbor in Maryland. We'll be back. It's the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Open up the champagne, pop. It's my house, come on, turn it up. Hear a knock on the door.
All right, welcome back to the Jeff Blair Show in National Harbor, Maryland. Site of baseball's winter meetings, the Toronto Blue Jays out of the gate already, agreeing to a 2-year contract worth $12.5 million with Steve Pierce. There you go. As we said, it appears that the door for Edwin closing even more than it did before Kendrys Morales was signed. I think we're safe to say if it's open, it's open a slight crack. I would say 2 years worth of a crack, maybe.
It's not open 4 years and $80 million
no,
worth of a crack.
No, 4 year, $80 million crack, that is absolutely gone. That is absolutely gone. The Toronto Raptors have a fairly intriguing game tonight against the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Raptors coming off a historic win over the Atlanta Hawks, and I do mean historic. 44-point win. A franchise record, beating the franchise record by two. And I mean, everybody contributed in that win. And well, Bruno even got a shot. Didn't make it, but he got a shot. Let's bring in Paul Jones, our Raptors radio analyst and Sportsnet 590 fan. Paul, how did that game happen? Because I'm watching that game.
Atlanta.
You know, I'm watching that game, and it just kept going and going. And I kept waiting at some point for them to stop scoring, and it didn't work. They just kept scoring and scoring and scoring.
Atlanta's in a rut right now. And, you know, Dwayne Casey said it best. It's a make-or-miss league. You're making those shots, you know, Atlanta just couldn't shut the water off. And you know, the Raptors had all kinds of season highs for points and three-point percentage and, you know, as you said, the largest margin of victory. You know, I dare I say something psychological as well. You get rolling and you just, the basket looks like you're sitting in a rowboat in the middle of the Atlantic and everything you throw up goes in.
Jonesy, can I ask you to draw back on your former life here?
Okay.
Because it's an argument that I've always had with people. But you know me, I tend to shy away from such things.
No, really?
But
it's Wilner, by the way, in case anybody's wondering.
Yeah, yeah.
In case
yeah.
anybody's wondering. Not Jonesy. We go back 30 years.
Yeah, that's I was going to say, if you can't date yourself, who can you date? But go ahead, Wilner. give our secrets away.
That's right.
Well, at least you get to date someone you love then.
But, well, I don't know if that applies to most people. But
go
Jonesy,
ahead.
Blair said it was a historic victory. I say it's an historic victory. Former principal, what do you say?
I think it's an, isn't it? With the H in
it. An historic. Listen, Wilner's the last guy to be. This is a guy who makes up words, and he's the last guy to be correct.
I heard
I make
that
up
on the
words.
Clip, and you were talking about somebody smashing, hitting, and what was
the
word, Blair?
Myrtleizing.
Myrtleizing. Yeah, I make up words, but I use them in a grammatically proper sense.
At least, right?
So, you talked about the rowboat and, you know, how huge the basket looks. But it's not just the one win, right? The win over the Lakers was almost by 40 points as well. What's going on?
You know, Mike, a lot of people were worried at the beginning of the year. There was all this, as I said, hand-wringing and consternation about not making three-point shots. Well, you know, Jeff, this is something that you and I had talked about on one of the shows previously. The Raptors last year were fifth in three-point percentage and 19th in attempts. And they're doing the same kind of thing this year, which tells me that they're taking threes, they're making threes, but they're not just indiscriminately heaving them up from everywhere. And that's the way Dwayne Casey wants to play. He's not saying the three-point shot isn't useful. It's a big part of the arsenal, but don't take bad ones. Let's get a good shot, and if it happens to be a three, take it. And, Michael, I think that's what's happening now. All of those threes that weren't going in at the beginning of the year, guys are now starting to make those shots. Damari Carroll's making shots. Lowry's three-point percentage has been incredible the last little while. So, you know, you're making those shots that you were missing, and everything goes up with it in accordance. A season high for assists last game with 28. So, you know, to your point, Mike, the idea of the make-or-miss league, they're making shots right now.
Cleveland coming in, that is a considerably different obstacle, if you want to call it that, than the Atlanta Hawks, with all due respect to the Hawks. What have you seen in these past, Jonesy, I'm going to say these past four Raptors games that makes you think, or maybe you don't see anything that makes you think that they've got a shot against Cleveland?
I just think the way they're playing, Jeff. They're confident. They're moving the ball well. Their defense has come up. 4 games ago, they were 26th in the NBA in defensive field goal percentage. They're up to 14th now. Nick Nurse, I kind of chatted with him the other day, and we were talking about the defense, and I wouldn't say he didn't seem worried, but he said, look, the defense is where it was last year at this point, and they started to make a move, and here they are now, 4 in the 6-game homestand, 4 straight, won 6 in a row. You know, the defense is starting to kick in, and, you know, the defense kicks in because why? You're feeling good offensively. You're making shots. There's that energy, and coaches never like it that way. They want the defense to be there regardless and fuel the offense. But, you know, guys start feeling good offensively, and you play a little harder. You got a little more of a, you know, a bounce in your step. And look, let's see where they measure up tonight against the team a championship team. They are the champs, and Toronto is hoping to find something that they can use to knock these guys off in May and June.
You said make or miss league, right? And they're making now. One would think that it's going to be a lot more difficult to make a lot of these shots against the Cleveland Cavaliers.
It is, Michael, but you know what? The formula that the Raptors have right now, the way they're playing, the way they're moving the ball, it's not just all, you know, grind it out in the half-court offense. Raptors, for years, traditionally have been very weak in fast break points. They were 25th last year. They're 8th this year. They're getting easier baskets. Their scoring is way up. They're third in the NBA in scoring. So, yeah, it is Cleveland, Mike, but you're testing out what you're doing better this year and how well it's working against a championship club.
Jonesy, the ability late in that game against Atlanta of guys like Jakob Poeltl and Lucas Niguer, and the guys who came in late and the guys who played down the stretch, even with that big lead. I mean, we saw them contesting every shot. We saw a couple of block shots. The thing that kind of amazed me about that game is even with that big lead, you saw a lot of stick-to-itiveness. I'm making up a word there. You saw a lot of stick-to-itiveness. It was almost as if there was this team-wide idea that we are just not going to let them score.
Yeah.
And I've got to think that that after the game, that had to make Dwayne Casey especially happy.
Yeah, I'm sure it did, Jeff, because, the biggest thing, you know, we had Patrick Patterson on after the game, Eric and I, and we said, wow, you know, what's with the offense? 8 guys in double figures, season high for you, you know, career high for Siakam, best 3-point percent, and he stopped us right there. He said, okay, can we talk about the defense? And I think that's the mindset that Dwayne Casey's trying to instill in them, and they have right now. And, you know, in the end, that's what's going to carry them. So, you know, Dwayne Casey's a guy that he's very traditional, Jeff. You and I have talked about this. He's very traditional in his ways, and he knows that defense is going to win. We're not going to see the rerun of 2 seasons ago where it was all offense, your turn, my turn. And now, mind you, they had some injuries that kind of led into that a couple seasons ago, but he's going to be on this team about playing defense, working at the defensive end, and especially tonight against, you know, Kyrie Irving, who scored 20 or more in 16 of the 18 this year. LeBron, you know, the outside shooting of J.R. Smith and Kevin Love and Iman Shumpert, and the fact that Cleveland is one of the best teams in shooting the 3. They're going to have to bring their defense, and I think that's the way that Dwayne wants it, the fact that they're locked in defensively. And, you know, they do have that defense as a mindset, Dwayne, Jeff, as you said, that Dwayne always preaches that, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're up 30 or 40 or whatever. Just keep playing defense. You want to build good habits by doing it that way.
Jonesy, we're going to let you run. Appreciate your time.
Okay, fellas. Good to chat.
Take care. That's
bye, Jonesy.
Paul Jones, our Raptors radio analyst on Sportsnet 590.
Jonesy did.
Fan. Yes.
Play-by-play.
Yes.
Of the University of Toronto Varsity Blues men's basketball team while I was their public address announcer.
Wow.
In the late 80s.
Want to mention, by the way, you've been scolded on Twitter. Adam Corsair, tell Wilner that if the word begins with a hard H sound, it's A. If the H is silent, like our, it is an.
Incorrect. That is correct on many words, not on words like historic. And Paul Jones, a high school principal, agreed with me. So there you go. An historic event.
I am disappointed that Mike Wilner has chosen to stand on stand with the laws of grammar.
That's right.
Very disappointed.
I stand. We may be in the Washington, D.C. area where facts and truth don't matter anymore.
I know you.
But I stand on the rules of grammatical rules.
You stand on it. The Blue Jays have signed Steve Pearce to a 2-year, $12.5 million contract. That is official. It's official. Shai Davidi of Sportsnet is going to join us. We're going to tell you a funny story about how we came close. Shai came close, not we. Shai came close to breaking that story last night. I'm sure he'll want that told. It's a Jeff Blair Show, live from the winter meetings in National Harbor, Maryland, on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.